Last week, Melbourne hosted the first ever World Congress on Malaria. Now, you'd think that for a parasitic infection that kills 1,200, mostly young women and children, every single day, there would have been decades of such conferences. But there haven't, which goes to how neglected malaria is on a global scale. Now, I have to make a declaration here that I chaired two panel discussions at the meeting, but what I heard made me think you need to hear some of this stuff too. The person whose idea it was to hold the Congress, which brought together scientists, citizens, policymakers, and others from over 60 countries, was Professor Brendan Crabb, who's director of the Burnett Institute and has been researching malaria for most of his career. Brendan is in our Melbourne studio. Welcome, Brendan.
Thanks, Norman.
What are the consequences of malaria?
Well, an awful lot of very damaging clinical disease is the main problem. So 2, 3, or 4 weeks off work or school and you know, very, very ill people in each clinical case, which is 200 million odd cases a year. But of course, in about 1 in 100 of those instances, it's life-threatening, and that leads to something like 500,000 deaths every year in the world at the moment. So they're the health consequences. And the second major problem is an economic impact. It's synonymous with poverty, perhaps like nothing else is. It really does keep regions, households, but of course even whole nations poor.
And is this why, I mean, it was suggested at the Congress, this is why it's relatively neglected, because it's the poor and marginalised who get it, not the rich in fancy suburbs, even in developing countries.
Yeah, well, that explains some of it, I think, but it's very hard to know why it's such an invisible disease. I mean, if we see Ebola in a developing country, then that gets a lot of attention. Of course, it kills nothing like malaria does.
I think you quoted statistics that with the recent Ebola epidemic in DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, that there were many, many times more malaria cases exactly that moment.
At exactly that moment. That's right. And every one of them is, of course, incredibly tragic. They might be invisible, and there might be some sort of general acceptance that this happens that leads to that invisibility. But every single one of those deaths is a major family and community drama, as you can imagine, in exactly the same way as it would be for us losing our own children or our own partners.
Now, why haven't we got this licked? I mean, I thought we have bed nets. People slip under insecticide bed nets. There are drugs. We had some resistance, but there are new drugs. Why isn't it licked?
Well, the first one is it's neglect. The second reason is it is very complicated. This is a disease that has shaped humanity. It's a very highly established human parasite interaction. I heard you speaking about HIV before and the difficulties around making a vaccine. It's a very, very similar set of circumstances for this malaria parasite. And so there is no magic bullet public health intervention like a vaccine. So there are some tools. They're not applied well enough, and there's nowhere near enough funding to apply them.
So is the solution a new drug or a new insecticide?
Part of the solution is technical. We certainly need new drugs. We definitely need new insecticides because of resistance to all the available ones. Part of the way the solution, though, is innovation in the way the current interventions are delivered. We just don't know how to get interventions with the money we have and the sort of interventions there are best applied in settings that are really poor, remote, otherwise difficult, and culturally have different norms to other places where they've worked.
So you might know what to do, but you're not quite sure how to do it.
That's exactly right. So collection of those things, innovation both in delivering existing interventions and in new ones, and innovation in financing are sort of the key points.
And there are perverse incentives here. So people tend to focus on what's called high burden disease, like the 10 countries in sub-Saharan Africa, which have huge burdens of malaria, and tend to ignore countries where it's almost licked. But if you let it go, it comes back. Sri Lanka being the classic example where it was almost eliminated. People neglected it, and now it's back with 23,000 cases or something just a few years later.
Well, Sri Lanka went back up 5 years after having only 17 cases in the 60s, went back up to 300,000.
300,000, sorry.
But now Sri Lanka has completely, somewhat miraculously, and at a great credit to them, completely eliminated malaria once again. So they have finished the job. They're an exemplar country. Of course, we've got to make sure.
Why should we care about it in Australia? So it sounds like a harsh question.
No, it's not a harsh question. Of course, we have eliminated malaria from Australia, but countries in our region, and of course the whole world matters to Australia, but particularly countries in our region continue to be dogged by this disease. It's a major reason why they remain as poor as they do, and poverty breeds insecurity, a very difficult place to work in and work with when you have that level of insecurity. So I think, you know, the main reason is a humanitarian one. These are our brothers and sisters who
and presumably it's also economic development. It would be good for us if...
It's definitely, you know, good for us economically, and it's the humanitarian right thing to do.
And you've got the extraordinary situation in Malaysia where a monkey version rather than a human version of malaria is taking over.
Yeah, what we're seeing is evolution in practice here. So the four main species of malaria that infect humans are strictly human diseases. Once upon a time, though, they did come from non-human primates, and we're seeing a fifth species, Plasmodium knowlesi, emerge right now in Malaysia, where Malaysia has largely beaten all the human malarias and now has many thousands of cases of this monkey malaria. Not yet sure if this monkey malaria is transmitting from human to human, but it's definitely transmitting from human to monkey, and unchecked, it will only be a matter of time before it becomes a bona fide fifth species.
So we need to be giving more money to this, and we haven't even got into the relative, you know, what we can relatively buy for the money, but a few hundred thousand dollars, a few hundred million dollars would go well.
Oh, it would make a huge difference. The community already does globally an awful lot with a small amount of money, and there's good plans to do a lot more with even a little bit more.
Brendan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Brendan Crabb is director of the Burnett Institute in Melbourne. I'm Norman Swan. This has been the Health Report. And finally, a heads up to Catch Science Friction with Natasha Mitchell. Last week, they looked at the ethics of experimental drug trials, recruiting people with terminal cancer, and this week, investigating the hope, hype and horror of private stem cell clinics. Two stories at the pointy edge of our experience as patients. Catch up with the podcast or this Friday morning at 11:30 on RN. See you next week.